I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
this
sucks less.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
Bellator
Heavyweight Champion, the leader of
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So today, as you guys can tell, we have a Q&A episode. We've just been trying to put these out at least once a month, maybe twice, and I have been getting so many questions, and thank you guys so much for going to simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com/ask or the link in the description and asking questions. This is, for me, I can really see what the listeners want to hear about, and it's just been so helpful for me. So I really appreciate you guys asking questions on Instagram and on simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com/ask. And so with that being said, we're just going to kind of get into the Q&A today. Some of the questions kind of range on competition, as always. And there are some other things on just gym culture and kind of getting to high levels of competition. But I think the big thing that so many people are going to want to hear about is how fatherhood has changed my training. I thought this was a good question I got from Instagram. And I got a lot of responses saying like, oh, I can't wait to hear this. And so we'll make sure to keep that pretty early in the show. But besides that, we're just going to kind of get into today's episode. I have so many questions. It's going to be kind of like a conversation between us, I think. But we're just going to go ahead and get into it. All right, we'll get into the first question. Hey man, love the podcast. Always a great way to get your question answered. Really fun and helped me a bunch. Even more of a way to get your question answered. Quick question. Teaching my first adult class, just filling in on vacation, and want to introduce designated winner. How many options, if any, would you give the class from a certain position? I want to focus on concepts, but want to give a bunch of examples. How many is too many? Okay, so this is actually tough. If you guys don't know, if you haven't been following the podcast, I know we have a lot of new listeners, but designated winner is just this term that I coined about, it's a way of training jiu-jitsu. And the best way to explain it is a positional spar where we choose one person to win every single round and the other person gives certain percentages of resistance. And we'll even define the resistance. Okay, I'm going to be doing guard passing, not even a specific guard pass, but just guard passing, and you are going to build frames on me, right? And give me 20%. And so we have this way of training that we like to talk about on the podcast. And so also fun little spoiler for you guys, in less than a month, there is going to be a way for you to listen to a multiple part episode on designated winner, and it's going to be kind of everything I know and understand about it now, and I'll give you guys more info on how you'll be able to listen to that, but I have something really exciting coming for you guys. I've spoiled it a little bit in other episodes, but we'll just keep it vague. But anyway, back to the original question. I kind of, you know, you're asking about implementing designated winner in this class, in this in this one class, and then talking about a certain position. And so what you're trying to do, I would say, is pretty hard. And the reason I would say this is because designated winner itself is an uncommon thing, right? It's not something that people naturally know how to do, how to feed their partner. And so how I would look at it is whatever position I'm going to give, I would need the explanation to be so simple, because I would be spending more of my time explaining how to play the designated winner game, right? I would let the game do most of the class, but like I gave that guard passing example, how I would look at it is I would explain that guard passing is about getting chest to chest, chest over chest, and I would give some examples on how I like to pass the guard, but they would be pretty quick and pretty simple. And then I would explain that designated winner game of bottom guys just building frames, and then top guy can kind of explore what he wants. if the bottom player really likes what he does, bottom player can even say like, hey, do that again. That was really good. I'll give you the same resistance. And, you know, it just kind of creates this, this synergy between the grapplers. I think it, you know, it lets you both focus on one person getting better. And, when you're both focused on that, you can make it happen so much easier. But anyway, that's what I would try to get them to leave with. I wouldn't even worry as much about the technique. I would focus mostly on why we're playing designated winner and how you can play it, and then really just reiterate what the top person's doing, what the bottom person is doing. That's how I would do it if I was teaching guard passing. If you were teaching something else, I would do it that way. You know, I would look at, but I would keep the concepts down to like one, because you just, the game itself is going to be a lot to teach somebody who's new. And it allows people to all be focused on that one concept, but working the jiu-jitsu that they already like to do anyway. And so that's why, how I would do it. But that's just a suggestion. I think that there are other ways that you could do that. That's just how I would do that right now, how I would implement it. So let's go next question. Who's your toughest training partner? This is a great question. Man, honestly, it sounds generic, but I do have an incredibly amount of tough training partners. But when I really look at like who is my toughest round, if we're just doing a round, and this is just, it has been this way for years. This is no surprise to anybody who's been in the room when we train, but Nick Sanders and I, we just, our rounds are, you know, it's almost hard to do at my gym. We almost have to do them at Revive because we just need room. But yeah, our rounds are just so tough. I could do like two of those rounds and then be good for the week on training. I'm like, I don't think I need much more. But yeah, that's definitely, you know, and I have so many good training partners, but meaning just tough rounds for me. But man, just consistently the toughest one has got to be Nick. Let's go to next question. How would you like to introduce beginners to sweeping? That's a good question. I would introduce them to guard retention first. Guard retention is really learning how to keep distance and create distance when you need to. That's what most of guard retention is. Yes, it's preventing people from controlling you. It's staying on your side. So all these other things. But the general idea that you will start to understand is like there are certain distances that you just can't let people get to because they will pass your guard. And so what I would focus on first is how to not get your guard passed. However you like to teach that, you know, that's what I would focus on first. And just kind of how to create distance, how to get away from people. And then from there, that's when I would start to focus on sweeping. And how I teach my guys to sweep at first is learning to control both legs to sweep, whether you're playing X guard, you're wrestling up, you're playing butterfly. And this is just how I like to do it anymore. And the reason is these are just going to be the most powerful sweeps for them to learn at first. They control people's athleticism. I just don't want to show stuff that they just like, they don't get to implement for so long because, guys are just too athletic for those positions. Right. I want to show stuff that really seems to work on everybody or at least almost everybody. And so my opinion is controlling both legs to sweep would be my next sweep. I mean, you even think about what the beginner's course typically is the double ankle sweep, right? That's like the first move that people will learn when somebody starts to try to be athletic. They start to stand, you hit the double ankle sweep. And it's what you teach in kids class. And then from there, you probably go into the, what is that called? The tripod sweep. And you have all these sweeps, but really the reason that those work is they make it really easy for you to knock your opponent down. They stay down because you're controlling both of their legs and they allow you to come up somehow. And so, if I'm looking at introducing sweeping to anybody, I would start with guard retention. I think That's essential. And then I would move into when guys start to crowd you, it's going to give you way more access to their legs, right? When they start to try to stand up on you, it's going to give you way more access to their legs. And so that's how I'd look at it. But again, this is just like, when I explain something like this, I'm really just giving you how I would do it if I was teaching that class tonight. That doesn't necessarily mean that I'm always going to do it that way, right? I may eventually have a different idea on what's most important from guard. But for right now, how I see it is distance and then learning to control people's legs so you can sweep them. Let's look at next question. As I prepare for my first IBJJF, what's the main thing I should focus on or as I prepare or when I get there? I think main thing, it's going to be different for everybody, right? I know it's just your first IBJJF, but it's not your first tournament. So it kind of still is going to depend on where you are in your journey. But I would kind of look back on the tournaments you've done and say, what has, you know, if there was one thing that I would argue that kept me from performing the way I wanted to or getting the result I wanted to, and if I could boil it down to what was the biggest thing, that's what I would focus on fixing, right? Besides that, as a competitor, you should always just focus on performing. I have a lot of different episodes on this. I think my simplest one, my best one on it right now is called Champion Stay Present. It's in the 190s. I'll link it for you. But if you haven't listened to that, that's going to really help with mindset. But maybe mindset wasn't the problem. Maybe intensity was the problem. Then I would focus on how to pace better. I would focus on maybe I should be going harder in some of my training if I'm not able to go hard in the tournament. I would base it more off of what thing you need to focus on, you know, what thing you need to prepare for to help you for this tournament and then hopefully help you in the tournaments in the future. Because the cool thing about if you start to figure out your mindset, it will almost become like this checked box where you go, I don't really have to focus on that as much anymore. If you start to figure out how you should be training for cardio, you'll be able to check that box and go, well, last time I did this and it worked really well. And so, I guess thinking long-term is kind of how I'm looking at this, but it will also help you now, right? You just get in the habit of each tournament, I'm going to fix something. I'm going to get a little better at something. What does it need to be? Does it need to be a position? Does it need to be a mindset or whatever, right? I would focus on what you need to focus on, I guess, is the answer to that question. Who do you like more, Jeff or Bryce? That's tough. Definitely Bryce. I mean, there's not even and you guys know how I feel about Bryce, so that should tell you everything that you need to know about Jeff. If you don't know, Jeff is the person I'm always using on the YouTube channel in the instructional content. And if I just let him run wild with a microphone for like 30 minutes, you guys would hate him too. You guys would feel the exact same way that I feel. Anyway, let's get to the big question. A lot of people wanted to know this. How has fatherhood changed your training? And how I posted this on, I got this question on Instagram and then I shared it. And I think along with that share, I said, what training, right? And I think that is how it has changed my training. I know for sure that I have been able to be less consistent with training. And I'm somebody who does really well off having a consistent schedule, knowing like next Tuesday, this is what I'm going to be doing. Next Wednesday, this is what I'm going to be doing. And because that's what I do every Tuesday and that's what I do every Wednesday. And that helps me so much. And having a newborn, even though you're still trying to, you know, you're trying to set a schedule for that newborn, it's not super easy, especially with my newborn. He's got a lot of McKinney in him. I was hoping he would have more of his mom in him, but he's got a lot of McKinney in him. So setting any schedule or figuring anything out with him has been a battle. But I would say that I had to start to get out of that mindset of I need to train on this perfect schedule. And when I started to just go, I need to train, I have options to train almost any time of day. And it's just a matter of me going, okay, I found 2 hours. I can take my 30-minute drive, my 15-minute drive, go train for an hour, and then head home, right? And I found that time. It also has been, you know, for me trying to make sure, because I know a lot of people struggle with this with their spouse, but like, because taking care of a baby is hard, and it falls on one person, it can frustrate that person, right? And so being able to just give my wife time to go work out, or give my wife time to go train, or give my wife time to go do whatever she needs to do, has given me more time, has made it easier for me to get more time to just be able to leave for that hour and a half or 2 hours to go train, or 6 hours, you know, if training is really hard. Just going in with that mindset has been big, but then also looking at, all right, I'm used to training 7 times a week, and you know, I'm used to training, or you know, whatever, 5 to 7 times a week. For me, probably 7. And since I'm used to training that way, that's the only way to get good. And getting out of that mindset and saying, no, there are other ways to get good. Training 3 times a week. What are my guys that only get to train 3 times a week? What are they doing right now? How do they get good? One thing is, those guys are even more focused, and they train very, very hard pretty much every practice, because they only have to perform 2 or 3 times a week, right? And so I noticed, like, oh, I can get away with training a little harder, training a little more volume when I am on the mats right now. So it's almost like I'm learning to make those training sessions count more. I cannot stress this enough. It's very hard. You know, it's people that have like 4 kids. I cannot comprehend how you do jujitsu. It must just be, your kids must just be fist fighting at home when you're doing jujitsu. I would say those are my main changes. I'm trying to think of, you know, I guess, to extend on that question a little bit, fatherhood has changed my training a bunch, but I am still getting better. I can still guarantee you, like, just by how I've been performing, how I've been feeling in training, what I've been able to do with the amount of energy I've put into it, has been really, really awesome. I've been really being able to go, oh yeah, I'm getting better at this, I'm getting better at that. I can also see certain positions that I'm just not getting to do enough, and I'm not as good at those, but I am still able to get better only training 3 times a week. And honestly, there were points where I was training maybe once a week when Matthew was really young. And so, yeah, that is kind of, those are my big changes. If anybody wanted advice on, like, oh, I have a baby coming, you should leave. You should run. It's not a good idea. I anybody that tells you it's a good idea, they just want you to suffer too. So I'm not there yet. I'm not wanting you guys to suffer. So yeah, you should probably just abandon ship and head out. No, I'm just joking. Don't do that. So gym relationships, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I had a pretty good clip from the podcast maybe like 2 months ago about picking up BJJ chicks. It got a lot of fun comments. So now let's talk about why you shouldn't pick up BJJ chicks. I would say I know for sure people that have met in the gym and gotten married and are happily married, and you know, people that have met in the gym and then broken up and it caused a lot of drama, right? But something else that I can note is there are gyms where people date more, and then gyms where people date each other less. And I have always been able to, I can always point out to you, there is less drama in the gyms where people aren't dating as much. And these are gyms that have men and women's program, but just by percentage, it's not like every girl that goes there ends up in a relationship, right? When you have that, because most of the time there's less girls at a gym, you know, and so when there's 10 girls and 100 guys and all 10 girls are dating a guy in the gym, when you throw statistics at how many relationships are successful, there's going to be a lot of breakups. And it just, to me, from what I've seen, it just creates more drama. And so I would say if you had any control of it, discouraging people from dating each other in the gym is ideal. But the problem is everybody's an adult and you really don't have any control of it. And so, you know, I think that, you know, maybe making fun of anybody that dates somebody in the gym maybe would be some form of like, what do they call that? Like social engineering. And that would maybe, that might help. But all in all, if you are thinking about dating somebody in the gym, I don't think it's a good idea. It just, you know, and I'm not saying don't date somebody that doesn't do jiu-jitsu. I just like in your own gym, a lot of times it creates problems, especially if there's a breakup, which statistically speaking is bound to happen. And it's just like it creates this environment where, you know, the guys have to side with this guy and the girls have to side with this girl. And maybe the guys are all like, man, I don't even like this guy. You know, like, I don't think we should all side with this girl. And then it creates, you know, it creates drama, it creates division. And so if you can avoid it, do it. But like I said, I have seen people that have met in the gym and have been together. I know multiple people that have met in the gym and have eventually gotten married and seem to have very happy, healthy marriages. And so, yeah, who knows? So this was a good one. Should I switch to another gym because my gym is very slow to give promotions? Ooh, you guys, you know what I'm going to say on this, right? Maybe not. So I think so many people, you know, they get really hung up on promotions. And it's hard to ask a black belt this question. And the reason I say this is because I give this example a lot. Me and one of my students, one of my black belts, Justin Kitchler, we were talking one day and he had mentioned like, yeah, I don't really care about the belt anymore. And I had the thought of like, you know, we just talked about this. I was like, yeah, you know, I stopped caring when I got a black belt too. I'm like, but I did care before. I stopped caring. And so, a black belt is like that. I don't even know what movie it is. I know it's a Leo movie. What is that? Is that Catch Me If You Can? The person says like, yeah, well, we don't worry about money. We don't think about money. And he goes, yeah, it's because you have it. And the black belt is the same way. Black belts will always tell you, myself included, like, no, don't worry about switching to another gym because you're not getting promoted. But that's just this blanket statement. There are probably situations when you're like, you know, the 6-year blue belt and maybe your coach just doesn't like you. And so he will not promote you and you're super consistent and you're trying to do the things you think you should be, but your coach just doesn't like you. I don't know. Maybe there is a reason. I don't think you should worry about it too much. I've always loved being around students and being around competitors and being around even coaches who don't care. Those people are so much more fun to be around in jiu-jitsu, in my opinion. But I wouldn't say that it's always a no. Just stick it out. Just, you know, get your promotion. Now, understand your promotion is not going to make you any better at jiu-jitsu. And so one of the easiest ways to force your team to give you promotions is just to like go compete and beat everybody down. And then they'll be like, oh, we have to promote this guy. He is the best at his belt. But most of the time, I would say the people that think that they deserve a promotion, they don't. Very, very seldom have I ever seen somebody be like, yeah, I think I am a brown belt and they're a purple belt, and me roll with them and be like, oh yeah, you're definitely a brown belt. Most of the time it's like, eh, I think that you're a purple belt. You know, I think that, you know, yeah, you could be a brown belt, but I think that you're going to be at the bottom tier of brown belt. And so do you really need to be promoted, you know? And so, I would say like, but there is a time that maybe it is so excessive that you're like, hey, I want to be a black belt one day. And I, you know, everybody I talk to does think that I am, much better. You know, people bring it up to me all the time that I should be getting promoted. And I never do. It's been years. Maybe that just isn't the right fit because your coach hates you. Maybe you're not likable. I don't know. Let's go ahead and we'll get into, I feel like there are some deep questions on this and, yeah, we'll go ahead and dig into some of these. So there's only a small percentage of people who are at the highest level. Why do so many people in jiu-jitsu think that they are at that level when it's clear that they aren't? Also, what stops people from reaching that level? Does it really come down to the gym and the specific level of training partners they have? Sometimes you see guys train 5 to 7 days a week, sometimes twice a day, but they never seem to make it to the top. Okay, so really simply put, this is a great question. Really simply put, and this is as somebody who has been trying to chase the top for a long time, and you don't meet many people that are even like me in jiu-jitsu. And then I don't meet many people that are a higher tier than me, a higher level than me, a higher percentage than me, but there are definitely those people. And it is because it is so hard to get to that level. It's so hard to get your black belt. Then it's so hard to be even decent at black belt. You may not realize this, but like if you put a room of 50 black belts in a, you put 50 black belts in a room together and let them just have open mat, everybody at the end of it would have conversations and they would all know exactly who the best guy and who the terrible guys were. And there would be an unbelievable, almost to like somebody who's a blue belt, an incomprehensible difference between the lowest level black belts and the highest level black belts. And it's not just going to be physicality. It is going to be skill. It is going to be proficiency in their jiu-jitsu. And so when I'm looking at this high level of jiu-jitsu and I'm seeing what, you know, what I'm trying to chase, and you go like, hey, well, what is it? What is keeping me from going there? For me, it's not high level of training partners. I can definitely say that because I know that even people that train at really big gyms, when they get to train with the training partners that I have, they're like, holy cow, this, the kind of like the base level of this, of these rooms is just so high. It's like anybody could be very good in that situation. But then you have to look at like, do you get to train those 5 to 7 days a week? And do you get to train them for a very long period of time? Because we do see some people that are training twice a day get really good in 5 to 7, 8 years, right? But even then, most of the people, when you say the top, they've been training for like 15, 16 years. And most of them have spent all of their time on jiu-jitsu, you know, in that time, training at the highest levels, training in the best gyms. It's because anytime you take something as a whole and then you break down the smallest percentage of it, the very top percentage of it, there are going to be so many outliers in that percentage. And it's so hard. Basically, what I'm saying is, it's just like that level is just incomprehensibly high. And so there is no specific thing that has to be done or that can be done that will guarantee to get you to that level. So many people, I've trained with so many people that I thought like maybe could get there, and they didn't, right? They didn't because of physical issues. They didn't because of injuries. They didn't because of mental issues. They didn't because it's just so hard to stay that consistent for that long on something that doesn't really pay you. And so especially doesn't pay you until you are that top percentage. And so, yeah, it's just like, if you want to be really good at jiu-jitsu now, if you want to have a chance to get to that highest level, you do have to, there is a massive time commitment to do that. And I'm all for like, you can train less than people train. And, you know, I really believe that, but man, it is very important to, it's very important to kind of look at it like this and say, you know, like, hey, it's the top percentage. It's the top 1% for a reason, you know? And so, or even higher than that, it's probably the top 1% of the top 1%. And I think the top 1% in jiu-jitsu is just black belt. And so there is like, there is a top 1% of black belt. And getting there is just, it's just incredibly hard. And it just takes so much time commitment and so much, you know, it really does take a level of luck. If you really think that like every single gym in the country has the potential to produce somebody with 10 years of training to be the best guy in the world, that's just not true. I would say there's probably only 1% of gyms that have that ability and then get that 1% guy to be able to come in. And so, yeah, it is very, very hard to make it to the top level of jiu-jitsu. You can even think like, oh, well, I would move to B team or I would move to New Wave. But you got to remember, there are also hundreds of people doing that that are the best guys in their area right now too, and think that they have potential and maybe they have a little more financial backing to be able to do it longer than you and they can just outlast you. And so it's, you know, as much as we want it to be secret techniques and secret training methods, and I think that there are still techniques that people don't know and ideas that people don't understand, and I think there are training methods that we don't understand, but I don't think that even any one of those things is going to take somebody who could never be that close to the top level to the top level. It is going to take so many different things laid on top of each other, the right coaches, the right teammates, the right schedule, the right consistency over the right amount of time into the right person. And so, yeah, that's kind of, I know that was a long answer, but it was also a long question. And there was like four or five questions in there. So hopefully I made it make a little more sense. So I never talk about this kind of stuff on the show, and I just thought I got a question about it, and why not just give my perspective if people like the perspective? Cool. If they don't, who cares? They don't have to listen to the show, especially when I talk about this kind of stuff. So let's go ahead and get into this question. And this is actually the last question that I have for today. And so do you think that you have to be under a big affiliation or a popular grappler to get recognition from Flow? It seems like there is a rotation of gyms and teams that fill up the Who's Number One card specifically. Flow clearly has other promotions and grappling events that they stream, but it doesn't seem like the grapplers that perform well on those promotions even get a chance to move to the next stage or level. Even when you look at the IBJJF streamed events by Flow, people will have stellar performances and matches, but it gets brushed under the rug, not to be showcased. Is it just because of where those people train? So yes and no. Like, yes, you have to be a popular grappler to get recognition. Why would Flow, you got to remember, like even at an IBJJF, there are all these people that are going to get gold medals, and maybe only 10 of them have a big name. And so if you look at, okay, here are the 10 guys with a big name, two of them are blue belts, eight of them are black belts, they all win, they're going to make those 10 posts, right? And they're going to clip those 10 videos and be like, oh, these are the things to watch. Why would they pick some random person that nobody has any emotional investment in and be like, okay, well, you know, here's some random guy from Granite City, Illinois that had a really good run today that we've never heard of before and probably will never hear of again. To start to get that recognition, you've got to be consistent over a long period of time. People talk about Flow and Daisy Fresh, and they'll talk about them like, oh, they got this gift from Flow. But the truth is, Andrew Wiltse won a million things in a row before he got recognition. And even then, the recognition, it felt, you know, as a Midwesterner, it felt a little more like infamy than recognition. And it was like, it wasn't until even Black Belt that he started getting some real respect. And then that respect blew up and it turned into this thing where a lot of their guys do get good recognition now. And, but that that came from that original group starting to build up a really good team, right? Without them doing those building blocks, those guys wouldn't get any more recognition than anyone else, right? And so when you look at this, it's like, why does Flo do that? Because you watched the series. You watched all the seasons of the series and you have this opinion on these guys and you know of these guys. If you pick any other purple belt from a random division, or you pick one of the guys that you've watched a 3-season series on, what are you more interested in watching? Even if you didn't like that guy in the series, you're way more interested in watching the person that you have some emotional investment in. And so, I think a lot of grapplers will complain like, oh, it's because I'm not from a big gym, Flo doesn't want to promote me. It's like, yeah, that's exactly right. They don't, because you have no connection to them. You don't have any really big name person that's pushing you, right? You don't have anyone saying, oh yeah, this is the guy that should be, that you should be focused on next. And other people do, other blue belts, other purple belts, other brown belts, they have that, right? And so you are, even if you're winning occasionally, you're still on the level, you're still on the same par as like all the other guys that you're competing against. You're all fighting for that spot. If you start to win in that spot super consistently and you promote yourself, you have an Instagram, a TikTok, a Facebook, a something that documents this, then that gives you a chance to start to get on Flo. That gives you a chance to start to get bigger and bigger stages. And so it's just so many people. Like, for instance, I got to commentate at the Worlds, right? I don't get to commentate at the Worlds if I'm just some random black belt adult even that competed. There were a ton of black belt adults, American black belt adults that competed that weekend at Worlds that would have loved a shot at getting to commentate on Flo and getting to commentate the Worlds. Maybe they actually won in the first round, and so they unlike me. Really, the reason that I was approved to do that, one is I had the right connection, shout out Jake Watson, and two was I have a podcast, and so it was a very easy sell to the guys on Flo of like, hey, Josh has a really popular podcast. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, but whatever, Jake said it. He'll be a great commentator when we need somebody to fill in. And I got that opportunity. I don't get that opportunity if I didn't promote myself by having this podcast. And so, as much as we want it to just be like, well, the best guys should get all of the recognition from Flo, it's like, it doesn't work like that, because Flo is a business. And their job is to get views, is to get people to buy Flo. And their job is not to be the unopinionated explainers of jiu-jitsu, or the to be unbiased, like you have to be with other stuff. They can be as biased as they want. They are a streaming service. And so, I just think that if people were to just be honest with themselves and go, okay, well, I need to take ownership. If that's my goal, is to be on Flo, and I need to figure out a way to promote myself and do it consistently over a very long period of time. And I promise you, there are guys that have won on Who's Number One that aren't as good as guys who have never gotten the opportunity. There are guys that have made bigger name for themselves on Flo and on Who's Number One and on the biggest stages simply because they promoted themselves well. So if you want to get a great situation, you need great opportunity, and you kind of have to create that opportunity. And so, I think that is all I have for you guys today. Hopefully you guys liked this Q&A. The questions felt different this week. I don't know. There were a lot of silly ones I didn't pick, but I guess I had a lot more deeper questions or people really wanting an answer to. And that is, man, that's what I love. If you guys have any questions, simplifyingjujitsu.com/ask. And you can ask me anything, suggest any technique, topic, or anything you'd like to see on the YouTube channel. Be sure to follow the YouTube channel, Josh McKinney BJJ. We are putting out so much new content and really learning how to put that out better and how to make that content very, very good. And so, yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. And I hope that today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.